Welcome, and here we are, and you're lucky I'm here because I have to be honest with you. I was in my studio tonight and I was mixing and working on a CD that I started 7 years ago. I'm trying to finish as best I can, and at 7:34 I looked at my watch and walked out of my studio, and then it dawned on me that I was supposed to be here tonight. I had totally forgotten, and I just had a an interesting afternoon. It made me forget. And then I went out to drive over here, and there was no car. My wife had taken our car, and their other car was in the shop. So, luckily, I could borrow the car. I was able to borrow our neighbor's car. And here I am, all in one piece. So, last week, the chat room wasn't working, so nobody could ask any questions. So, I asked you last week if you have any questions. Please ask them today. So before we begin, I'm going to stall a little bit for you. And if you have any questions, please ask them now. I'll just summarize what we talked about last week. Last week we talked about what do you do if you can't follow the value made, or you can't, or you sometimes can follow it, or you can't follow it well. How do you deal with it? And then we looked at different strategies, and a couple of the things we looked at is that for some people, being committed is not really their nature, so to speak. They were not raised in committed environments, or their personality is such that they're not as committed as others. So we discuss other factors aside from spiritual weakness that can contribute to the problem of following vows and commitments. And then we also discussed the idea that falling down is not the end. Falling down can also be educational. And falling down is only down if you stay down. You know, there's an example that when you fall down on the ground, you use the ground to get yourself back up. So you may have tripped on the ground and it caused you to fall, but then you use the ground to get back up. So we can learn lessons from how we fell, and we can actually become stronger from it. And we also discussed how sometimes we need to fail to become successful. It's sometimes we don't do things because we're afraid we'll fail, but if we understand that often we need to fail in order to become successful, we'll be less concerned about failing and more concerned about making the effort. We also discussed in the last two sessions the importance of effort, because Krishna wants to see our effort. And some people have to make a greater effort to follow their commitments. It's just a reality. And Krishna appreciates the effort. Effort is a very important thing in bhakti. Result, of course, if we have made commitments to our spiritual master, we want to keep them. But results aren't always the criteria of success. Sometimes the effort itself is really what's important. So we also discussed that if one finds that one cannot keep one's vow or cannot keep it completely, then it's important to at least adjust one's vow to something that one can keep, and then keep one's vow in mind. This is the goal. And even, let's say you didn't make a vow, but you know what the goal is, then you set your sights on something which you feel you can achieve, and then gradually work towards the goal. But the whole point is don't give up. The whole idea is the process of bhakti, that's the purifying process. If you give up the process of bhakti, then you're giving up the purifying process. So the idea is to somehow or other continually engage in bhakti. And I'll tell a story. It was kind of funny. Srila Prabhupada had a disciple in the early days of the movement, and I believe his name was Devarshi. And Devarshi, I told the story before during the japa session, but Devarshi was very what we call spaced out. And yeah, I guess he had taken a lot of drugs. And he would chant one or two mantras and then he would stop and look around. And then chant a few more mantras and had to stop and stare. And that actually took him all day to chant 16 rounds. And if you live in a temple, that's a requirement. You have to chant 16 rounds. So the devotees didn't know what to do with him because he couldn't do any service because it took him all day. And actually, that's all he could do was chant his 16 rounds. So they asked Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada said he has to do his 16 rounds, even if he doesn't do anything else. So it's interesting because that was the vow he took, and Prabhupada gave him the leeway. If that's all he could do, then that's what he should be doing. And you know, you might think, well, he's spaced out. It takes him so long to chant, so let him chant 2 hours. However many rounds he has done in 2 hours, that'll be it for him, and let him engage in service. But because he made that vow, Prabhupada wanted him to commit. So, does anyone have any questions? I don't see the chat. Okay. No questions yet. Okay, I'm going to read something. Is that okay with everyone if I read something? Okay. We'll go on to today's session, and then you can ask questions anytime you like. Okay. Krishna tells us in the Gita to offer him all we do, all we eat, all we offer, and all we give away. Just as one can offer Krishna an existing thing or a present action, if you have something now, like a flower, you can offer that to Krishna, or you can offer some service now. Just as you can offer something presently, one can also offer him a future action. Well, how do you offer Krishna a future action? That's what a vow is. It's an offering, it's a promise that I'll do something in the future. One can also offer him a future action along with the perseverance to fulfill it. So that's what a vow is. I make a commitment to act in a particular way in the future, or to offer something in the future, and I commit to it. I make a determination to do it. That's what a vow is. That offering of perseverance is characteristic of a vow. The offering of perseverance. That's interesting wording, isn't it? So we understand what perseverance is. Sometimes we talk about it in relation to being steady in devotional service, to persevere through difficulties. And there will be difficulties. There must be difficulties for conditioned souls. So perseverance means be tolerant and be determined. Stick it out no matter what. Here, it's nicely said. I like the way this is said. The offering of perseverance. That's nice, isn't it? We're offering our perseverance to Krishna. The offering of perseverance is characteristic of a vow. A subsequent change to one's purpose is like taking away something that has been dedicated to him. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but when we were kids, I guess it's still used today, but we were kids, we had this saying, Indian giver. You know what an Indian giver is? If you give somebody something and then you take it back from them, like I give you something, say, you can have this, I don't need it, and then I call you next week and say, can you give that back to me? I actually do need it. Then you're called an Indian giver. I don't know why, but you are. You're an Indian giver. So if you could say, if you make a vow to Krishna that you're making an offering, it's an offering of perseverance. And then if you don't keep it, then you're like an Indian giver. So, Krishna, I committed to do this to you, but now I'm not doing it. So we can think of vows or commitments as offerings. Of course, not only to Krishna, but to a spiritual master, to other devotees, to one's spouse, to one's boss, to one's friend. Anyway, it's an offering. So we've given something. What have we given? We've given our word. We've made a commitment. Here it is, and I've given it to you. And now we can't follow it and say, so I call you up and say, can you give me back that commitment I made to you? So that's what it's like. So we become Indian givers on the commitment platform. Okay, I want to talk about how vows are personal, they're relational, they're generally vows. Of course, you may make it to yourself, but generally vows are made to other people. And even if you make a vow to yourself, it's an interpersonal relationship. You're dealing with yourself. You're making a commitment to yourself. And there can be ill effects in not following personal commitments. So I'm going to read something to you. When you make a vow to Krishna, It helps to think of it in terms of a personal relationship with him. For example, if you make a promise to a very dear friend and then find it difficult or inconvenient to fulfill, you'll likely keep your promise if you know your friend will be upset if you don't come through. Is that true? Maybe you don't want to, but you have a relationship. So, because you have the relationship, you're thinking, oh, I promised to do this. I really don't want to. I don't feel like it. It's difficult. I don't even know if I can. But he's my friend. He's depending on me. It will hurt the relationship if I don't. So let me do it. Of course, you may explain to that person why you can't. There may be some situation and the person will understand. But I'm giving the other example of where you feel that that wouldn't be appropriate, and then you feel that the relationship will be hurt if you don't commit, keep your commitment. So this way, we can see how commitments are personal, that relationship is involved. Okay, you can think the same way about your promises to Krishna. When you are having trouble following your vows, it's helpful to think that you will be letting Krishna down if you break your promises. Have you ever thought about letting Krishna down? Has that thought ever entered your mind? Oh, I better do this, otherwise I'll let Krishna down. I think most of us think Krishna's having lunch with his cowherd boys, and they're stealing his lunch because he has the best things. Did you know that? Krishna has the best lunch because his father's the king, Mother Yasoda's the queen, so he has the best lunch. Kachoris and sweets and all kinds of nice things. And the other boys, they just have dal and rice. So you know what the other boys do? They steal his lunch because he has a better lunch. And so Krishna has to end up eating the dal and rice, and then the cowherd boys get to eat all the nice prasadam that Krishna brings. Or Krishna may be having a rendezvous with the gopis. Or Krishna may be herding the cows. He may be going out. He may be coming back. He may be going to Radhakund to meet Radharani. He goes there every day at noon. He's got a very regulated schedule. He may be going there at noon to meet Radharani. So we can think of Krishna. This is called Ashtakalya Lila. We can think of Krishna at different times of the day, what he's doing. You know, he goes out at night. Sometimes he goes to parties. He goes dancing with the gopis. He comes back in the morning. And Mother Yasoda doesn't know he's gone out, gets back in bed. So he has a very regulated schedule. So we might think, in light of the fact that Krishna is enjoying with his friends in different ways throughout the day, we might think, can I really let Krishna down? Is that really possible? I mean, if I don't do what I committed to, am I letting Krishna down? I mean, after all, does he really even think about me? Does he really even know about me? He's just up there with the cowherd boys, right? And the cowherd girls, and Jasoda Mata, Nanda Baba. But the vow we make, if we make that vow to Krishna, then we should think, if I don't follow through, I'd be letting Krishna down. It's a good meditation. It can be very sobering. We may be thinking, oh, I don't really feel like doing this, or this is difficult. But then we can think, I committed to do this to Krishna. I will be letting Krishna down. I promised him I would do this. I don't want to let him down. Just as you don't want to let your friend down. Because there's a relationship there. That's the whole point. There's a relationship there. And I don't want to disturb the relationship I have with Krishna, so I don't want to let him down. Okay. Now, relationship is like an emotional bank account. Every time you do something positive, you add deposits. And every time you do something negative, you make withdrawals. If you make more withdrawals than deposits, your relationship will eventually go. Where will it go? Bankrupt. Right? You take all your money out of the bank, eventually you'll have no money. If you put money into the bank, yes, then you'll become very wealthy. So if you find it difficult to maintain your vows, it's helpful to think in terms of your emotional bank account with Krishna. You can impersonalize your relationship with Krishna by thinking he really doesn't feel bad when you don't keep your spiritual vows and promises to him. But since he wants you to love him and come back to him, don't you think it hurts him on some level every time you do something that moves you further away from Krishna? This is a very nice meditation. If we go back to the idea, well, does Krishna really care about me? Does he really care about the relationship? Well, he does care about the relationship. Well, how do we know he cares? I mean, we're down here in this world. We often forget him. For so many lifetimes, we've done things that did not enhance our relationship with him, but actually hurt it. We may have actually turned against him directly. We may not have believed in him. We've done so many sinful things. So we may think, well, why would Krishna really care about me or be interested in me or be interested in a relationship with me? We might even think, why would anybody want a relationship with me? Some people think that way. So if you think, why would anyone want a relationship with you, it may be difficult to think why Krishna would want a relationship with you. Or even if other people do like you, you may still find it difficult thinking, why would Krishna want a relationship with me? I am just a sinful person who has forgotten him for thousands, millions, unlimited numbers of lifetimes. But look at Bhagavad Gita. Did Krishna have to speak it? Did he have to come down? Didn't have to, but why did he? Because he loves us, because he wants us to come back to him. If you study Bhagavad Gita carefully and you want to get right to the essence of Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's love for us. The word yoga really means love. It's a connection. It's a relationship. Be united with me in yoga. So Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita, it's all about yoga, to unite with him. He wants that. He actually does. Believe it or not, Krishna actually wants that. It will make him happy if we go back to him. So therefore, anything we do which inhibits our spiritual progress, our progress back to Godhead, that in a sense hurts Krishna, because Krishna wants us, Krishna's waiting for us. Believe it or not, Krishna is waiting for us to go back to him. So he wants us to love him. He's missing us. He's feeling empty. Krishna, as I said before, Krishna has everything. But there's one thing Krishna doesn't have. And that one thing is our heart, our love. That's the one thing he wants that he doesn't have. So if we could give it and we don't, then Krishna doesn't get it. He wants it, but he's not getting it. He wants the relationship, but he's not getting it. So the more we can do to enhance the relationship, to serve him, the happier he'll be, and the happier we'll be. Everyone will be happy. Be one big happy family. So that's a nice meditation. He wants us to love him and come back to him. So on some level, it hurts him if we don't do everything we can to go back to him. Just like, you know, imagine you run away from your father and he wants to see you. And you say, okay, I'll get back to you, and you're on the other side of the world. But you're not really trying that hard to get back. So your father really wants to see you. He wants to reconnect with you. And you're not trying that hard. So he calls you. Did you get your airline ticket? Well, not yet. It was too much trouble. Will you make some excuse? So he's obviously going to be upset. He's waiting for you. He wants to see you. He loves you. So Krishna wants to see us with him. He wants us to go back there and dance with him. Yes. Okay, here's another thought. Now that you have that thought, hopefully, firmly implanted in the innermost chambers of your heart, here's another thought. Another thought to ponder is your relationship with commitment in general. Isn't that a nice phrase, your relationship with commitment? Have you ever thought that you have a relationship with commitment? It's a nice way of looking at it, isn't it? It is. I like it. I hope you like it also. Consider if not being able or willing to be trustworthy in your spiritual life also influences your trustworthiness in other relationships. In other words, now we're talking about commitment globally, not just spiritual commitment, but commitment in general. You're like on the commitment meter. Where do you stand on the commitment meter on a scale of 1 to 10? So let's say you say, well, I'm a very committed person. So the likelihood is that if you're high on the commitment meter, then when you become a devotee, you'll also be committed in Krishna consciousness. And it's possible if you're low on the commitment meter, then when you become a devotee, you might find it challenging to be committed. So now we're just discussing that principle, irrespective of what you've committed to, just the principle of being committed, your relationship with commitment, our relationship with commitment. Consider if not being able or willing to be trustworthy in your spiritual life also influences your trustworthiness in other relationships and vice versa. I think it does. As it said, there's a saying, how you do anything is how you do everything. So we're just making the point here that if you're not committed in general, it's likely that will influence your spiritual commitments. And if you become more of a committed person, if you strengthen your relationship with commitment, then it would seem likely that automatically your spiritual commitments would follow if you become a more committed person. So being a committed person is important in all aspects of life. If we want to be successful in relationships, we want to be successful in general, we need to be committed to what we're doing and committed to the people we're working with. So if we strengthen our commitments in general, naturally that will help us spiritually. Or if we strengthen our spiritual commitments, it's likely we will be more committed in other areas of our lives. Okay, now I want to talk about how vows empower us. We've talked about this a little bit before, but I wanted to go over it again. Vows as empowering. And what does that mean? Well, you've probably heard of the word stretch in relation to doing something which you find difficult or beyond your capabilities or what you think you're capable of doing. That's called stretch. I really had to stretch to do that. So vows can be stretches for us. We may commit to things which are difficult to do. And so we have to stretch to do it. So when we make a vow, I'm going to do this, things in our life may have to change. We may have to grow more to be able to do that. We have to become bigger, a bigger person, a better person, a different person. So in that way, vows empower us because they force us to become a little bit bigger, a little bit better. So I want to read this to you. Srila Prabhupada didn't teach that people only keep vows because they are sense-controlled or spiritually strong, although that would be one reason they do it. He also taught that people keep vows because they value their word of honor. Because they value their word of honor, they tolerate provocations that could cause them to break their vows. He knew it wasn't easy, and he knew that many of those who took initiation had a very degraded past. But he also knew we could remain steady in Krishna consciousness if we took our vows to heart. He taught that vows empower us to do what ordinarily would be difficult. They make us rise beyond our normal abilities. That's important. Vows empower us to do what ordinarily would be difficult. They make us rise beyond our normal ability. So that's one of the reasons we may consider taking a vow. It's so we can ensure that we will do something that maybe we have doubts we would steadily do. And it's to empower us or force us or pull us up to a higher level. Now that I'm committed to do this, then things will change in my life for the better so that I can follow this commitment. So then we become empowered by the vow. We can easily get this formula backwards. If we think we need spiritual strength to follow our vows, it's natural to blame a fall on spiritual weakness. Right? Well, I fell down because I'm spiritually weak. But it is being committed to the promises we make to Guru and Krishna that give us the power to be self-controlled. Let me read that again. If we think we need spiritual strength to follow our vows, it's natural to blame a fall on spiritual progress. But it is being committed to the promises we make to Guru and Krishna that give us the power. So in other words, if I make a promise and a determination or an offering of perseverance, then I get the power to follow. Instead of just thinking I made the promise and it's difficult, so I blame it on the fact that I'm spiritually weak. Of course, when devotees blame problems on being spiritually weak, then Srila Prabhupada, he really didn't accept that as an excuse. And he said, why should you give in to your weakness? In other words, if you've made a commitment or a promise, and then you have a difficulty following it because you feel spiritually weak, in Prabhupada's view, you shouldn't use that as a rationale to conclude that you cannot follow. But rather, you should use it as a red flag that's telling you you need to put more energy into your commitment. At least that's how Prabhupada looked at it. That's how he wanted us to look at it. Once you make the determination to fast, it's like fasting. Once you make the determination to fast, you get the strength to do it. If you think, maybe I will fast the whole day, what are the chances that you're going to make it? Like on Janmashtami, we're supposed to fast. And if you think, maybe I'll fast, you probably won't. But if you think, on Janmashtami, I'm going to fast, then you get empowered. Okay, here's a good example. Everybody awake and listening? Good. So listen to this. It's really a good example. And I'm not just saying it because I came up with it, but it's a good example, even if I didn't come up with it. Okay. Have you ever heard someone say, I don't have the energy to exercise? Actually, I saw a t-shirt there. I don't have the energy to exercise. And what do you think when you, if you saw a t-shirt like that, what would you think? You would think, no, if you exercise, you'll get the energy. You'll have energy if you exercise. It seems logical to them, to their way of thinking, it seems logical that first I need energy, and then when I have the energy, I'll exercise. Right? Well, I don't have enough energy to exercise. So when the day comes that I have enough energy, then I'll exercise. I don't know about that. Unless you're actually sick, what's the reason they don't exercise? We know. Because they're lazy. They don't feel like it. So saying I don't have the strength to follow my vows is the same kind of backwards thinking. Commit to your vows and you'll get the strength to follow them. So if you think of this saying, I don't have the energy to exercise, and apply it to vows, say, well, I don't have the strength to follow them. No, Prabhupada's teaching was, just be committed, and then you'll get the strength through the commitment. Because if you're committed to following, then following those vows gives you the power to continue to follow them. Some psychologists say that it becomes a habit. The more you follow, the more you become habituated to follow. And then it's like you're becoming empowered by habit. And also empowered, if they're spiritual vows, by Krishna directly, who is reciprocating with your commitment. So I don't have enough energy to exercise. I don't have enough strength to follow my vows. It's the same thing. Follow your vows, you'll get the strength. Exercise, you'll get energy. When Prabhupada was asked how to be determined, he said, we become determined by following the regulative principles. So following the principles gives determination, but the devotee, he was asking, how do you get the initial determination? So we asked the question again. He didn't think Prabhupada understood the question properly, so he was saying, no, I mean, how do you get the determination to follow the principles? And Prabhupada said, it's not your business how to get the determination. What did he mean? He meant you have already taken a vow, so there's no question of getting the determination to do something you already committed yourself to. That would be like borrowing money from a friend and then asking him how to get the determination to pay him back. I don't know if I told this story. Anyway, let me explain this. I might have explained this before, but I'm going to explain it again. Perhaps you don't remember or you weren't here listening. The idea is something like this. I borrow money from you to start a business. And then I tell you, I'll pay you back $1,000 a month. And so I pay you back for a few months. And then the business isn't going well. And I give you a call and I say, how do I get the determination to pay you back? And then you think, what are you talking about? What do you mean? You owe me $1,000 a month. You said you'd pay me. No, how do I get the determination to pay you back? You say, what are you, crazy? What are you talking about? No, I don't have the determination. I need determination. Sound funny? Sounds weird, doesn't it? So, that's Prabhupada's point. So the person is asking, how do we get the determination to follow? And Prabhupada said, whereas a question of determination, you already promised. In other words, the vow is, what do we say? It's an offering of the future. You already offered to follow this vow for the future. So it's like the contract. You'll pay me $1,000 every month. You're already offering this vow. You've made a future offering that you're going to follow it. So that's why Prabhupada said, there's no question of determination. You already promised. But if you follow through on your promise, then you'll get the strength because you're following the principles. So, you know, somehow or other, you have to pay that $1,000 a month. You're committed. And if you're committed, you'll figure out how to do it. And it probably will become easier as you continue to do it. Now, somebody have a question out there in chat land? Jumping Jack Flash has a problem doing pull-ups, too much exercise. Well, maybe you should change your name to Lazy Jack Flat. To Lazy Jack, what's the opposite of Flash? Lazy Jack Black. Lazy Blackjack. If you're jumping Jack Flash, you better be exercising out there. Okay. So anyone, I'll give you some advice. If you're feeling sluggish, a little under the weather, exercise, you know, move the body around. The body is the only machine that gets better by using it. Isn't that interesting? It's the only machine that gets better by using it. So, and if you do that, then you can remember, do the same thing with your vows. What if I'm a shady businessman and don't like to honor my promises? Then, in your next life, you'll get cheated by shady businessmen who don't honor their promises. Yes. Krishna has a divine, universal arrangement. And so, we don't have to worry about divine justice. It's built into the system. And then we also get our own divine justice. So, now, if there are no further questions, I'm going to read a little more. I think this will help you also. I want to bring an interesting perspective on... I like to bring in interesting perspectives. I think that was an interesting perspective also, wasn't it? How do I get determination to borrow money to pay you back? So, Yes. Become a good businessman with the spiritual master, yeah. Honoring the deal we made with him, yes, exactly. And the deal we make with everyone. We should honor the deal we make with everyone. So, you know, the point that I've made in the past, and I want to make again, is that in talking about spiritual vows, spiritual commitment, it's really important to look at commitment in general, our general relationship with commitment. Because if we just apply it spiritually, we may not realize that we may be lacking in general in our commitment. So it's important, and that's what we're doing. We've done last week a little bit, and we're doing now. We're looking at commitment in general. Just how committed. So it's always helpful to be committed. You know, there are three modes of nature, and it's important as devotees that we try to exist as far as possible in the mode of goodness. Because the mode of goodness is the next door neighbor to the transcendental mode of goodness, which is known as Vishuddha Sattva. Mode of goodness is called Sattva Guna. It's a material mode, which means it's a part of this material nature in this material world. But there's Vishuddha Sattva, which is transcendental goodness, which means it's not influenced by any of the modes of nature in this world. So the mode of goodness is the closest to that transcendental mode of goodness. So such things as commitment, straightforwardness in our dealings with people, honesty, forgiveness, tolerance, compassion, all these qualities are of goodness and they help us. Now one could say, but I thought unless one's a devotee, one cannot have these qualities. Or I thought that until one becomes purified, these qualities won't develop. They'll just naturally come as a byproduct of purity. Yes, that is true. But at the same time, qualities develop in a seed-like form. And Prabhupada gave the example that a devotee who is engaged in Krishna consciousness, but is new, is not a pure devotee or completely purified, is like a green mango. And so it matures. So these qualities, you could say, are like green mango qualities. You can practice them, and we should practice them. The qualities which will keep us, qualities of goodness, which will keep us in goodness. And so commitment, perseverance, determination, these things will help us in our Krishna consciousness. They will keep us situated in goodness. Okay. You are welcome, Jack. Jack is appreciating these classes. I'm also appreciating. I benefit. I like to give them because I also forget. The very things I teach, I'm reading this article I wrote. I'm reading it because I forgot what I wrote. So, you know, you could say, well, did I really write it? Or was there a partnership there? Was Supercell helping? It seems to some degree it's true because I forget a lot of what I've written. It's like Krishna's there giving intelligence. So I want to give you a perspective on the regulative principles which might help you. It seems impossible for most people in Kali Yuga to follow the four regulative principles. Because of this, we can easily fall into the trap of thinking that I am only human and it is normal that I cannot follow. Have you ever thought of that? Thought like that? Well, I'm just a human being and it's pretty normal not to be able to follow all the four regulative principles. I mean, who can really follow them? Just a rare soul. So I can't argue with that entirely. I can argue with it a little bit. No, it is true. It does take a rare soul. That's one side of it. There's another side of it that it may be that the rareness is relative to the condition of society at the present time. Yes, it's true that it is normal not to follow, but as devotees, we are not meant to be normal. This is so important. Of course, Prabhupada said you have to be a little crazy to be a devotee. So we already know we're not normal. But why do I say it's important to understand that we as devotees are not meant to be normal? Because normal in Kali Yuga means, what does it mean? Anybody out there? What does a normal person in Kali Yuga do? Like, they go to the bar, pub on Fridays and Saturday nights, they go party, get drunk. Most people eat meat. Practically everyone is having illicit sex, even, you know, 12, 13-year-olds are doing it. So that's, you know, being normal. That's normal in Kali Yuga. So what Prabhupada called this is being a victim of Kali. So when we become a devotee, we don't want to be normal and we don't want to be victims of Kali. Although following the four rules seems to be an elevated thing to do, Prabhupada's take on it was different. He said, these are simply the activities of pious human beings. Actually, you could say not even pious. Of course, now in Kali Yuga, these are the activities of pious human beings. But you could say, strictly speaking, and Prabhupada did say, these are the activities of civilized human beings. So we can look at the four regulative principles, and then we can think, wow, you know, this is elevated stuff. And if we look at it that way, then it makes it more difficult to follow, because we're thinking, well, I'm really biting off more than I can chew here. This is really some tough stuff to deal with. And here Prabhupada's saying, no, not really. This is what qualifies one as being human. This is what a civilized human being does. He controls his senses. He's disciplined. So, you know, when you think something's difficult to do, you know how much more difficult it becomes when you think it's difficult? And have you ever tried to do something that you thought was difficult and just got completely psyched out? It's natural psychology that the more difficult you think something is, even if it's not difficult for you, if you just think it is, it's going to become difficult. Or at least it's going to become more difficult. And generally, if you think something's not so difficult, it's a little easier to approach, and you approach it with more confidence, more determination that, oh yeah, I can do this. This is not a problem. So I think that's helpful in regards to what we're saying here. If we look at the principles of Krishna consciousness as really principles for civilized human beings, not some big, you know, well, this is only for demigods or superhuman beings or sadhus. No, it's for civilized human beings. So I want to become civilized. And so then it's like, it brings it down to earth a little bit. And you know, Prabhupada thought that if we established Varnashram, everybody could follow. Okay, so now are there any other questions? Okay. Mistakes, I've made a few, but then again, too few to mention. Oh, that was Sinatra? Okay, well, here's the take on mistakes in Krishna consciousness. Everyone's going to make mistakes. You know what they say? It's okay to make a mistake once. It's not okay to make it over again, because if you make it over again, you haven't learned. So there's a learning process. You know, when kids are young, they try to walk and they fall over. So young devotees sometimes fall on their face. That's not surprising. But we don't want to fall on our face forever. So even Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says, even my devotee may do something which is considered socially unacceptable, abominable. But if his determination is to serve me, that's where his real heart is, then he's considered a sadhu. Just like there's a story, Gajendra the elephant, he was bathing. So somehow or other, I guess elephants are into bathing with she elephants. They're all lovey-dovey with their girlfriends, and they go bathing and do some hoochie-coochie, apparently. I'm not an elephant expert, but this is the story here. And so Gajendra was, doing some hoochie coochie in the river, and he got, all of a sudden, a crocodile bit his leg and was holding on to it. And so he didn't know what to do because he can't really fight in the water. That's not his habitat. So he prayed to Krishna to save him. Krishna saved him. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who's a great spiritual master, who came after Lord Chaitanya, sometime after Lord Chaitanya, he said that one may sometimes, a devotee may sometimes, pray to Krishna to help him out of some difficult material situation, or help him materially due to circumstances. But he said that generally a devotee's desire is not to ask Krishna for anything for himself. But sometimes, when the circumstance is difficult, he may ask. So I think we can relate that to falling down, that a devotee generally doesn't fall, but circumstantially, sometimes it may happen that he may fall. But if his real motive and his real mood in Krishna consciousness is to follow, that's what's important. Because that will give the devotee strength to follow. So that's when Krishna says, sometimes he commits an abominable action, but he's considered a sadhu or saintly because he's rightly situated, because he regrets that, and his real heart is there in bhakti, and the fall is temporary. So we want to put our heart on the path. And, you know, it's really an interesting psychology that a lot of times when we have difficulty falling, we try to look at the reasons why it's happening, which really are excuses. Okay, why am I falling? Well, it's this, this, and this. And we're looking at the reasons not to rectify ourselves, but we're looking at the reasons to do what? To justify it. Right? It's not a good reason, is it? You don't want to look at the reason. Why did I have this trouble? Well, I had this trouble because I was born under the wrong star, and my mother smoked cigarettes, and my father always traveled, and my sister was a jerk, and I didn't like school, and I had bad teachers, and when I left school, I got a lousy job, and it drove me crazy, and I was never very studious, and I have a lazy side, and. So we look at all these reasons. And the result is, that's why I can't follow. Now I finally figured it out, why I can't follow. It's all these reasons, all right? Some people actually, you think that's funny, but some people actually do that. So, and you may think it's funny and you don't do it, but just if you start to think a little more, you'll see that you do it. We all do it. On some subtle, maybe we don't do it so grossly, on some subtle level, we're looking at excuses why. Well, who can I blame for that? What can I blame for that? You know, how come you didn't get up this morning? That alarm clock is not loud enough. I need a louder one. If it were louder, I would have gotten up. Okay, so you can blame your alarm clock. Whatever. So, Prabhupada's point in a really powerful meditation is, rather than look for all the reasons you fell, why not look for all the ways you can become stronger, right? Because you're looking for something, you know, your mind is working. It's working there, looking for all these reasons. This is why I can't follow. Well, why not look for an angle, a strategy, a plan to follow, rather than look for the reasons you can't follow? It's really simple. You know, sometimes things are so simple, people don't get it. They don't even think of it because it's too simple. That is so simple, but it's so powerful. It's like so simple, people don't think of it. Just think of ways to follow. Think of a strategy, a psychology, a way of thinking. How can I think? How should I think so that I can follow? That's the point. Yes, the devil made me do it. It's all Krishna's fault. Right? That's a good one. And the devil made me do it. Maya made me do it. If it were up to me, I wouldn't have done it. Maya made me do it. I'm a dancing dog in Maya's hands. Of course, we chose to be a dancing dog. That's the problem. I mean, there is truth to this idea, the devil made me do it, because if you really get down in the, if you allow yourself to sink down into the lower modes of nature, deep into the mode of ignorance, you practically have no free will in the mode of ignorance. You're just, you're so covered, you can't really do anything. Anyway, now, let's go back to our example of the borrowing of the money. I have borrowed $1,000, and I call you up, and I say, I'm having trouble paying you. How do I get the determination? And, okay, let's give another example. This is not, I want to give another example. This will work better. The same example, I owe the money, and I call you up, and I can't pay you back, and I have some excuses. Okay. Now, think of something that you committed to that you didn't do. And think of an excuse you might have had. What might that excuse? Why didn't I do it? I totally forgot. That's a pretty good one. Well, I was waiting for you to pick me up. I was waiting in the snow for you to pick me up. What happened? I totally forgot. Well, yeah, now I have frostbite. I'm in the hospital. Can you pick me up there? Not a good excuse, right? Let's think of some other excuses. Why didn't you do this? You told me you were going to do this. I was too busy. You ever have that one? Why didn't you do that? I'm just a lazy bum. Oh, what about, I'm overwhelmed. I got so much going on. Why didn't you do that? It's not really important. Can't find the time. I don't feel like doing it. Doesn't really matter. I'll do it someday. I have more important things to do. I don't know why I forgot. I don't know. I just forgot. I just can't do it. It's too difficult. I'm too weak. Krishna understands. I didn't really mean it when I committed, when I promised. I didn't really mean it. I have enough trouble just keeping my life together. I didn't learn responsibility when I was growing up. I don't know why I made the promise. I'm not good at following through my commitments. So those are examples of some excuses we might make. You might relate to some of those excuses. So now, you know, you think of a few that you might make in your life, you know, when you haven't kept a promise or a commitment. What excuse did you make? You know, why? Well, I'm just weak. It's too difficult. I shouldn't have promised, whatever the excuse is, right? Okay. So now let's say someone owes you $1,000, right? And they haven't paid you, they owe you $1,000 a month, and this month they haven't paid you back. And so you call them up and you say, why haven't you paid me back? And they give those very same excuses that you make when you don't do something. So how would you feel? You call this person up. I know how you feel. You probably want to knock them in the head. You call this person up and you say, you owe me $1,000 every month. You haven't paid this month. And the person says, I forgot. And then he hangs up the phone. I'm too busy. I'm lazy. I'm overburdened. It's not that important. I can't find the time to pay you back. It's okay if I don't pay you back. I don't feel like paying you back. It doesn't matter if I pay you back. I'll pay you back someday. I have more important things to do than pay you back. I don't know why I forgot to pay you back. Click, hang up the phone. I just can't pay you back. It's too difficult to pay you back. I'm too weak to pay you back. Krishna understands that I didn't pay you back. Yeah, I didn't know what I was promising when I promised, like that. So what would you think? The very same excuses we make when we don't follow through, they take on a completely different light if somebody had committed to us and didn't keep it. It's a good exercise, isn't it? Yeah. No, so what I want you to do, look at your life and look at something you haven't committed to, and then think, but what's the excuse? Did I make an excuse? What excuse did I make? Then if you see you're making those excuses, then follow Prabhupada's advice. Instead of making an excuse, think, use your mind, which can be your friend or your enemy, think of a strategy. Think of how I can use my mind to figure out how to do it rather than to make the excuse. Because certainly if someone owed you money and they made those excuses, you would be upset. And certainly Krishna must be upset a little bit if we make those excuses why we don't follow our commitments that we make to him. Yes. Who was that, Popeye? I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a veggie burger today. Yeah. Or was it Poppy's friend? No, it was Popeye himself. So, does everybody understand? Wimpy. Is that another character? Yeah, we don't want to be wimps either. So, does anyone have more questions? It's almost 9 o'clock. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions. So, you know, one of the things, what really I would say, if I had to sum up everything I ever want to say on vows, Wimpy would ask Popeye for the burger. Oh, now we're getting things really authorized here. Wimpy would ask Popeye for the burger and say, I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a veggie burger today. Yes. So, if I were to summarize or hit the nail on the head regarding vows, or at least hit one of the nails on the head regarding vows, I would have to say this, that oftentimes we look at a situation and then we say, I just can't do it. Have you ever said that? I just can't do it. I can't keep it up. It's too difficult. And that language makes it even more difficult. Because now we're committed. It's like the language of commitment to failure. Instead of being committed to the vow, we commit to the failure. I just can't do it. It creates this whole psychology. So the whole idea is not to give in to what may appear to be a reality that I can't do it. Don't so easily give in to it. But give in to the mentality of what is required to do it. And then see how far that takes you. And if you can't follow it perfectly, then reevaluate. Well, how far can I steadily follow? Rather than just throw in the towel and say, it's too difficult, I can't do it. That's such a negative way of looking at things that makes it virtually impossible at that point to really succeed. Aroti Dasi, how can one person preach Krishna to people? Don't understand the question. Maybe you could rephrase it. Now you're talking about veggie burgers and I'm getting hungry. Can somebody send me a veggie burger? Federal Express. Actually, you want to hear a nice story? That sometimes, I've had this experience many times that I've been hungry, but I had to cook for the deities. And that after I finished cooking for the deities, I wasn't hungry anymore. So maybe by thinking about veggie burger prasadam, I'll meditate on it and I won't be hungry anymore. I'll meditate on offering it to Krishna and then I'll be satisfied, just like Sudama Vipra offered Krishna some chip rice. And then when Krishna ate a piece, he was going to eat more, and Rukmini said, you don't have to eat any more. That one piece has satisfied the whole universe. So when Krishna is satisfied, we become satisfied. Oh, yes. You want to hear? I'll tell you a story about veggie burger. I don't know if it's the one you're asking, but this is a funny story. In Guadalajara, I went to a Rath Yatra in Guadalajara, Mexico, back, I don't know, years ago, 10, 20 years ago. Well, you want the story about Rukmini? That story, okay, I'll tell you that story briefly. Sudama Brahmana was a friend of Krishna. They went to Gurukul together, and he was very poor. They hardly had anything to eat. All their clothes were dirty and full of holes. So his wife said, "Sudama, why don't you go to see Krishna? He'll give you money. He's Krishna, you know, he's wealthy." So she said, "Here's a present for him," and it was just some chip rice. I guess chip rice is just cracked rice. It's like the lowest quality rice. So Sudama went there and he thought, "Well, I'm not going to ask Krishna for anything. He's my friend, but I'll just go. It's a chance to go see him." So he went to see him, and Krishna worshipped him, and they had a good time. They reminisced about their days in Gurukul. And then he was ready to leave, and then Krishna said, "Well, didn't you bring anything to me?" Because he wasn't going to offer the rice because he was embarrassed. And he kind of, Krishna, I guess he just grabbed it from Sudama and took the rice. And he was in bliss because it was an offering of bhakti. And then he was going to take more, and Rukmini said, "No, you've had enough. Don't eat this, and the whole universe will be satisfied. If you're satisfied, the whole universe is satisfied." So then Sudama went back home, and when he came back home, there was a palace existing where his little hut was, and his wife was decorated in expensive clothes and jewelry. So Krishna had done that to Sudama, and he had just given him a little chip rice. So that's the chip rice story. I don't know why that. Why are we talking about chip rice and Sudama? We're really off on a tangent here tonight. You're going to have to help me here. So, yeah, Guadalajara, Mexico, we're at Rath Yatra. So they were serving out these veggie burgers that tasted exactly like the real thing. They had a special process for doing it. I don't know what it was. And they actually had a stand that in the park, and they sold these, not just at Rath Yatra, but they sold them all the time. Except the only thing is they didn't tell people they were veggie burgers because they tasted so much like meat. They just called them hamburgers. So all these Mexicans like to eat meat, were eating all the devotee veggie burgers, and they didn't even know they were veggie burgers. So they were, I thought that was kind of funny that they weren't telling them. Okay. Non-alcohol beer. What about non-alcohol beer? Oh, could bring back bad memories, I think. But it's better than real beer, that's for sure. Okay, everyone's getting hungry. We're gonna have to go. Can't hear me anymore. It's all a big blur. Yeah, you know the. This is distorting, because the volume is all the way up. Constantly, even when I'm not talking. The microphone. Hold on. You see it? Can't do anything, or it's working? Oh, okay. It's working. All right. So, don't leave yet. Can devotees hold hand and pray together? Yes, why not? Streetstar wants to know, what does it mean? Say, there's a song, Se Rata Se Tapa Se Mantra Japa. It's a song that a devotee is praying to Rupa Goswami, who is his spiritual master. He's saying that the whole purpose or meaning of all my vratas, vows, all my tapasyas, all my austerities, and all my japa is you. You're the whole reason I do it. So, you know, we in Krishna consciousness, we do a lot of things that are difficult, things that we wouldn't normally do, but we're doing them for our spiritual master, we're doing them for Srila Prabhupada. So he is the object of my vrata, the reason of my vrata, the life of my vrata. Vrata means vow. Yes. So we're asking about preaching. How do you go out and preach? How do you know? You don't actually. It's not always like you have to officially go out and preach, but there are also, not that you shouldn't or wouldn't want to, but there are also opportunities. So many places there are opportunities to introduce Krishna consciousness. You can go to work and wear, make buttons with shlokas on them and wear them, or, you know, get t-shirts with sayings on it, and people will read it, chant and be happy, whatever. So, at this happy hour of 9 o'clock, we're going to end, and we will see you next week. Same time, same station, blah, blah, blah. Same time and same station. And Hare Krishna to all of you. And please send me some veggie burgers and pizza. I'm getting really hungry. Hare Krishna.